Blog Talk Radio.
You know, I was in the big house this weekend. Almost watched the second coming of Appalachian State. But I'm glad to be back in the booth. So
Michigan looked like the Amir Khan of football.
Greg Scalzo, TJ Hogan here, and we're now being joined by friend of show Devon Wilson of Real Sports Guys. You can follow them on Twitter at Real Sports Guys. What's up, Devon?
All right, welcome to the Cypher. This is D. Wills. We got a special edition here. The Cypher, you know, is a segment out of our RSG One mic, and you know, we go into the Cypher when it's a special edition. Looking forward to this. One, we're going to have an opportunity to talk to former Michigan Wolverine and national champion Sean Higgins. It's the third year anniversary of that 1989 run. As someone from Ann Arbor, from the Midwest, we had an opportunity to really watch some incredible Big Ten teams. If you've been following us, we had a chance to interview Dr. P.J. Bowman, who played on that Flying Illini squad that was tearing it up. And you heard a little bit about the run from his perspective, but today we have an opportunity to hear from Sean. And as the person who actually hit the game-winning basket against Illinois that thrust Michigan into the final championship game. And so we're looking forward to talking to him here in the Cypher this morning. But in the open mic here, I want to just make sure you folks who have been following us, you know, we try to step the game up. You know, it's important for us to do that. And we just launched a new website. So you guys have been going to realsportsguys.com. Go check it out. We got Sekou's hip-hop year in review on there. You probably have seen it. If you've been on our Facebook page, you can go to Real Sports Guys on all social media platforms. But the blog is on the website under the blog tab. And then I'll be dropping a blog. You'll love it, addressing the NFL coaching hiring and just some of the underlying issues that caused an outcome where you only have two African-American coaches and one Latinx coach in the NFL, in a league that has just overwhelmingly athletes of color. And, you know, some of the systematic things that's not about individuals but how systems create it. I'm just dropping it on that. So make sure you go and check that out on the site. And so we're going to be, you know, moving this around. There's been a lot happening here in the world of sports here lately. And so, you know, we're going to use that platform, particularly the website, as a way for us, again, to communicate to you in different ways. We wanted to find a more dynamic platform website that we could do more to connect with you. And so that's just one more element that we're adding to the game. You'll probably see some live tweets from me tonight. I'll be covering the Wisconsin-Purdue game at the Kohl Center, another Big Ten matchup. And so, you know, you'll get some tweets and you'll get some stuff from me tonight on that. Hank and I will be dropping another podcast here on One Mic that'll be coming out. You can probably catch it live if you want to this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. But we're going to be hitting some of these issues that I've been writing about that I'll be writing about on the website. So there's a lot going on. You got NFL playoffs coming up, and you know, a lot there happening. NBA happening. Had a great matchup in San Antonio between OKC and the Spurs. My man Aldridge went for 56, I believe. Incredible run. You know, you got Denver leaving the West. Dwayne Wade found the Fountain of Youth last night in helping Miami overcome and take over and beat the Boston Celtics. So sports is you know, you got the old coming back with the new. You got all kinds of stuff happening in here. So, you know, we're excited to have an opportunity to be at this time with you in 2019, you know, having this kind of conversation about what's happening in the sports world. But, you know, this is the Cypher. You know, this is where we go deep into a topic. And as I said before, you know, I, you know, many of y'all know I grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And, you know, I work in Wisconsin with Madison, UW-Madison with the Badgers. So, you know, I have these Big Ten ties a lot. But y'all know at the end of the day, I am truly invested in what is happening, you know, here in the Midwest. And so it gives me great pleasure to kind of be focused on this issue today. And so we are going to, you know, take a short break here and then set up for our Cypher session where, you know, y'all can have an opportunity to hear, you know, some really some old school hoop talk.
Right about now, you're about to be possessed by the sounds of MC Raw Face and DJ Easy Rock.
Get up, pack it in, let me begin. I came to win, battle me, that's a sin. I won't ever stop.
All right, we're back here on RSG, the Cypher, our special edition of RSG One Mic. And as you said, I said before, you know, for those of you who've been following us, you know, I was out at the Maui Invitational, and one of the interviews I did while out there, because Illinois was out there, was the 30-year anniversary of the run of the Fighting Illini to the Final Four. And the person that actually knocked them out is who we'll get a chance to talk to with a last-second tip in. You know, I have to say, you know, he probably doesn't remember. We both, I remember meeting him when he came to Ann Arbor from L.A. There was a mutual place near the big house where we all gathered, and he hadn't been in Ann Arbor that long. And it was early on I knew, I'm like, this guy's special. I heard a lot about him, and I really enjoyed watching him play when he was at the University of Michigan. And really excited about, you know, what he's doing now for a lot of young people here, you know, who aspire to be student athletes. So I want to welcome to the air Sean Higgins, former Michigan Wolverine national champion, NBA player, and now working with young people to, you know, develop themselves as student athletes as well. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing well, Devon. How are you?
Man, this is you might not know this, but you've been on my list of people I wanted to interview for a while, man. So I'm so glad that we can have this conversation and kind of have it in. It's weird that we're talking about this as a 30-year anniversary. It feels like it was just yesterday. Y'all were making that run. You know, I want to just begin a little bit about you talking a little bit about your own kind of college experience and also that run to the national championship. You know, when you think about the team that you played on, you know, y'all came in to the season, you know, coming off of having a tournament run a year before where y'all lost to North Carolina. But you came in as a preseason, you know, highly ranked team and ranked, you know, in the top 10 for, you know, for the year. And so it was a team that a lot of people had a lot of respect for. But y'all had a lot of great players, including yourself, on the squad. What was it like to be, you know, at the University of Michigan at that time, doing what you were able to do as a team?
Well, you know, personally for me, I'm originally from Ann Arbor. You know, I was born in Detroit, but I was raised in Ann Arbor. Went to elementary school there. So the University of Michigan, you know, it's in my blood, man. I bleed maize and blue. You know, I grew up on all the Bo Schembechler teams. And so, you know, for me playing and putting that jersey on, playing for the University of Michigan, you know, it was an honor for one. And then the other part of it is that, you know, I felt the sense, you know, it was territorial, you know, you guys, you know, you stand up for your schoolhouse. And so every time I stepped on the floor, you know, that was the mentality. It was like war. And then having the type of teammates that I had, you know, the great players that we had, the talented guys, you know, and you go down the list. And so, you know, I always felt that having those type of teammates, we always had a good chance to win any ball game. And then also, you know, the fact, you know, that same reason is why I went to Michigan. You know, just the camaraderie that the guys had when I was on my recruiting trip, man, it was my best recruiting trip out of the five that I took. I took five trips to official visits. I took one to Kentucky, Louisville, University of Texas, and UCLA, and Michigan being the fifth. And, you know, on my recruiting visit, you know, that kind of sold a deal for me. You know, when I was just, you know, got a chance to just be around the guys. And, you know, I fit in good with those guys. And, you know, it carried over on the floor. You know, I can remember a play in preseason, my freshman year, in preseason against Grambling State. It was a loose ball. And, you know, the whole summer before we moved into the dorm, you know, freshmen had to stay in the dorms. And so I moved in with Terry Mills for the summer. And so Terry and I got close. And so the loose ball, I got to the loose ball before two of the Grambling players. And so when I picked up the loose ball, they crowded me and trapped me. So I couldn't turn and face. But out of my peripheral vision, I saw Terry under the basket. So I threw it to him over the back of my head. Kind of like stuff Larry Bird used to do.
Yeah, that's right.
And Terry caught it, He caught the pass and then he dunked it backwards. And so we got after the game, I asked Terry, I said, what made you dunk that pass back? He said, that's the way you gave it to me.
And people got to know, man, Terry Mills is sometimes forgotten. I had a chance to play against him in high school. I played at Pioneer. He was at Romulus. And, I mean, I saw him play from the time he was a, you know, freshman, sophomore on up, and just, you know, one of the top players in the country coming out of high school, an incredibly gifted basketball player. So when you said he did that, I was like, I was not surprised that would do something like that. I mean, you also played with people don't know, you know, Loy Vaught, and Loy and I connected a lot when he was at Michigan. I mean, he had the field goal title that year that y'all won it. I mean, his field goal percentage, you know, he had a really good career with the Clippers, Mr. Double-Double, I call him, as well. So you had guys like that who are, you know, everybody knows Glenn and with the run he did, but that team y'all had of just gifted players, and y'all really, it seemed like y'all shared the ball and enjoyed getting the ball around and getting everybody touches. And so that's the part that I loved about watching that squad.
Well, we love to pass, you know, especially,
yeah,
you know, myself and Terry, you know, we like passing the ball. And so guys like Loy and Glenn, you know, they benefited from that. And Loy, man, he shot 66% his last season in college, and from the field, he led the nation in field goal percentage. And, you know, Loy Vaught, you know, he was a man out there. Loy Vaught was a man. You know, he's a fifth-year senior, but he was a man physically. And so, yeah, man, we had some talent on that squad.
So I'm going to set the picture, man. So I'm with my guy. I'm going to school in Wisconsin. You know, a friend of mine, P.J. Bowman, plays at Illinois. You know, I know Glenn and those guys. And so y'all final game is in Ann Arbor, so I'm going to come on out there. Told him I'm coming on out. So I come out. I get out the car. It's the Friday before the game. I'm walking in to Chrysler Arena at the time, not Chrysler Center. And getting out of the car was Keith Jackson and David Robinson. That was when David was taking time off between, because they were broadcasting the game. At that point, I knew it was going to be a big game. Kendall was coming back off of injury, had been playing. You know, they had beaten y'all in the previous time y'all met down in Champaign.
Right.
You know,
right.
This is senior game for Glenn. And so I hung out. I remember getting kicked out of practice by Steve Fisher. I went to see y'all practice. And Frieder sent them over to kick me out. I had a Boyd College shirt on, and Fisher asked about this. Our Boyd College coach, who was actually the guy who decided on the vote on a three-point shot. Everybody knew him.
Okay.
And so it was the nicest I've ever been kicked out of practice. So we set the tone. So I go to the game. I'm thinking, this is going to be a battle. And Illinois runs y'all out the gym. And I remember talking to Glenn that night. Glenn was upset.
Upset. Hey man, it's 30 years later, so I guess I can spill the tea, huh?
Yeah, spill the tea.
All right, spill the tea. The reason why Illinois beat us, and I've never said this publicly, but the reason Illinois beat us so bad, you know, they were a great team. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they had some horses, some thoroughbreds.
Yeah.
You know, but the reason why they blew us out. You know, because you look at the Final Four game, you see how tit-for-tat that game was. It was close. It was like Ali Frazier.
Yeah.
But the reason why Illinois beat us is this, and this is, you know, it's traditional Bill Frieder. You know, he was staying loyal to his senior, which was Glenn Rice.
Yeah.
And so what he told us before the game, he said, we need five passes and nobody can shoot until Glenn Rice touches the ball. Because he wanted Glenn to go out with a bang.
Wow.
And so how can you do that against a team like Illinois? Because Glenn benefited from having the talented you just mentioned. Glenn benefited from having all of us around him because Glenn was not a guy that could playmate. Glenn, you had to get Glenn off.
Yep.
And so Glenn benefited from us. But when we're out there looking for Glenn, when we have opportunities to keep the defense honest, now, guess what? They sucking down on Glenn, and now we are playing indecisive. I had four points that game. And we all played. We played terrible. And that's the reason why. And it's not a knock against Coach Frieder. He was just being loyal. He was being loyal to Glenn Rice. He wanted Glenn to go out. His whole Glenn, I remember Glenn had his whole family at the game. And so we all bought into it. Like, we were like, let's get Rice off.
Wow.
And it backfired on us. Instead of us just going out there and playing and being ourselves like we did in the Final Four, we were out there playing timid because we were trying to get Rice off.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a true story.
Wow. So the irony gets crazy because, obviously, after the game, Coach Frieder announces he's got the Arizona State job, and that's when, you know, the legendary Bo Schembechler, now AD, says he's going to have a Michigan man coaching a Michigan team. I remember when the guy went to the podium, I'm like, that's the guy that just kicked me out of practice. And Steve Fisher took over. What was that transition like? Like, when that announcement was made, y'all had just come off this loss, you know, a game that y'all knew y'all could have won. In your mind, and now you got this change in coaches. Like, what was it like for y'all as a unit with that kind of shift?
It wasn't really that big of an adjustment because, you know, Coach Frieder was a businessman, and he approached coaching the same way. You know, he delegated a lot of responsibilities to his staff. And so, you know, Steve Fisher was always vocal in practice and running stuff, you know, in addition to Coach Boyd, Mike Boyd. And Coach Frieder, it was like a three-headed horse in practice. And so, you know, having Coach Frieder leave like that, it was a blow to us. I'm not going to sit here and say it wasn't. Emotionally, it was kind of a shock. But we snapped out of it quick because, okay, it's not like they're going to bring somebody new in here. It's Coach Fisher. So we're familiar with Coach. You know, I just did an interview right before we got on the air with Steve Kornacki. And I expressed to him, I said, Coach Frieder was like our dad and Coach Fisher was like our uncle. You know, it was kind of a good cop, bad cop scenario. And Coach Boyd was like our uncle as well. He just played the neutral position. And so Coach Frieder was smart in that regard in terms of, you know, delegating responsibilities to his staff. You know, some coaches, you know, they're kind of control freaks and they don't give their assistant coaches, you know, that type of leeway and platform to teach and coach and do their thing.
Wow. So y'all start the tournament. Y'all going on this run. You're facing Xavier. You got South Alabama. Got Carolina. I think you have Virginia. Then you have Illinois. At that run, how did that run? How did y'all confidence? I mean, not only you're playing, but then that was also when Glenn just went off. I mean, his record is still holding right now in terms of his performances over that time. But what was it like to start to see that run? And at what point did y'all understand, okay, we can win this?
Well, it went back to preseason when we knocked off Stacey King and Mookie Blaylock and those boys at Oklahoma in the Maui Classic, and we won that tournament in Hawaii. That's when we start saying, man, we can win the whole thing because we were ranked number three in the country. And so the whole season, that's all we talked about is winning the national championship. And so after that game, you know, that gave us our confidence. And then we had a couple of letdowns in Wisconsin, Indiana, and Alaska Anchorage. Let those games slip by. And then the massacre, the last game of the season against Illinois in conference play. But it didn't waver our confidence. You know, that's one thing about myself and my teammates. You know, we're all pretty confident guys, like even our personalities off the floor. And so, you know, so that right there in itself, you know, gave us that edge. You know, but just going down, you know, throughout the games, I mean, if you look at Glenn Rice, the run that he had and how he got on fire, you know, I watched Klay Thompson the other day score 40-some points, only take four dribbles. Rice, I think Rice might only took maybe 10 dribbles the whole tournament.
I know that. That's what I'm saying. I'm going to tell people, you better YouTube it, youngins. You need a YouTube it. You might take 10 dribbles. You're right.
The whole tournament. And that was a testament, and Rice will tell you this himself. He said, my teammates is who got me off. Because, you know, Frieder was smart, man. He went out and got guys to surround Rice with that will keep the defense honest. I mean, just imagine if Rice played with a team – you know, that couldn't score. He didn't have any other scores. He would have struggled.
Yes. Yep. And I think what I love, and when, you know, when they talk about a team, one of the reasons things I highlight about you, and I'm glad you talked about it, is, you know, you're like 6'9", can handle the ball. You can shoot the three. You're a great passer. And so having that element, that glue piece, along with, you say, like Terry was handling the ball all the time, even when he was in ninth grade. I mean, ball handling. So
yes,
having
yes.
those – when we talk about these bigs right now, it's funny when people talk about it, and I talked about this with PJ because I thought Illinois, you know, with the position of basketball, I think they were playing that with that squad. You know, it's nothing new to have guys who are 6'9", handling, can shoot the three, because you were doing that. You know, and so that element you're talking about that allowed Glenn to get off, I think was really real about that. And that's something even as I was watching y'all, I was looking at and checking it out.
Yeah, man. You know, I tell guys, I said, Terry Mills was like Danny Manning coming out of high school.
Yes.
You know, he was just but more athletic. You know, he was another guy. He played a role. He was able to fit in. You know, he had such a high skill set. He was able to take parts of his skill set and incorporate it into a system with all these other talented guys. When you're multi, you know, skilled like that, you know, you have more weapons in your toolkit. And so, yeah, man, I think, you know, I try to consider myself, you know, I consider myself the X factor, you know, in terms of our teams, because, you know, I was younger than all those guys, and they had already tried to get past North Carolina previous to me getting there. I remember they got knocked off by Navy my senior year. Then my freshman year, they got knocked. I didn't play in the second half of the season. And they got knocked off by North Carolina twice before I got there. And so, you know, I consider myself, you know, part of the X factor element that kind of got us over the hump, if you will.
So then I'm setting the context again. So my boy PJ said, hey, man, you want to come out here to Seattle? And I knew y'all about to show off. I said, no, I'm going to try. For the first time in my college career, I said, I'm going to study. You don't know how sick I was when I saw y'all getting introduced. But I should have been there. So I watched the game. So I'm watching the game.
Hey,
like
you would have had a great time after the game, man.
You know that. You know that's how the F troop. We're gonna let people into no secrets. But you know, we know how it goes down. So I definitely would have had some good time after the game. I'm with you on that one. So. The game go down tit for tat. Now, everybody knows about you hitting the game-winning shot, but the play I always talk about was you were on, I believe, on the right side of the floor. You spun, and then you went down the lane and dunked on Lowell Hamilton. Do you remember that play?
Yeah, that's funny, man. It's a couple – hey, man, it's a couple of backdrops to that story, man. That's a couple of back. I got some good stuff for you on that one. So let's start in the beginning. Okay. So Illinois, you know, they were a physical team, and you know, most of their guys, they're from Chicago. You know, they had the urban, you know, the street ball element about them, and so do we. So if you look at that game in the first half, I went to the bucket the same way. It's a picture online actually of me cocking that thing back on Stephen Bardo. With Steve Bardo, that's my guy, man. We were in training camp together in San Antonio. We talk all the time via social media. But Bardo went up, and he almost caught that. He almost caught one, but he fouled me, and I still tried to punch it on him, but I missed and went to the free throw line, but they knocked me to the ground. They stood up, him and Kenny Battle stood over me. And, you know, they used some explicit. They said, don't bring that weak up in here. This Chicago, boy. This Chicago. And so we were talking smack at the free throw line. You know, I was saying my piece, talking a little bit back. You know, I said, that's okay. We got a long night. I'm going to catch y'all before it's over. And so on that particular play, you know, Nick tried to rip me. And, you know, I copied this, the popcorn dribble from Magic. Now you see it, now you don't. You dribble it high, make him reach, and then you spin off of him. And so that's what I used, that popcorn dribble on him, and he went for it. And so when I spent, now let's talk about the recipient, Lloyd Hamilton. Lloyd Hamilton and I, when I was in the ninth grade, Lloyd Hamilton was a senior. He was ranked number two in the country behind Ben Wilson. Lowell Hamilton played for American Round Ball Corporation, ARC, which is a youth basketball organization, which my company's partnered with to this day, ran by a guy by the name of Rich Goldberg. And back then, they didn't have the AAU stipulations where you had to be connected to the state in order to play for that AAU program. So Rich would go out and get guys from all over the country to come play for his organization because it was called American Round Ball Corporation. So he had the flexibility to go out and get players all over. So Lowell was on that team. And make a long story short, in practice one day, here in Las Vegas, I live in Las Vegas. Here in Las Vegas, we were over at Bishop Gorman High School, the old campus. I dunked on Lowell Hamilton in practice in the ninth grade that same way. The same way. Because Lowell Hamilton would go try to block shots. He was a shot blocker. And I dunked on him in the ninth grade the same exact way. Now, fast forward 4 years later in the Final Four, I dunk on him again the same way.
Wow. Wow.
That's a true story, man.
Did you say something to him?
No, I didn't say anything to him. I just came down. Yeah. I gave Lloyd Vaught a high five and Rice and went to the free throw line and hit my free throw.
I'm gonna tell you what. I was in my residence hall when you did that. I ran out in the hallway and ran outside. it was like Dolomite. It was like Dolomite when you did that. I ran out the room. I ran out the room, ran outside,
man.
And yelled, "Hail to the victors!"
Hail to the victors, baby. That's funny, man. But you know what's so crazy, man? All the Illinois guys, those are my guys, man. You know,
yes.
Steven Bardo, Nick Anderson. You know, me and Nick played together after that for the Orlando Magic, and, you know, we were really tight. You know, I used to go over his house. His mom lived down there in Orlando, and she used to cook for us. And, yeah, Miss Anderson, she's a beautiful woman, man. And Marcus Liberty, me and Marcus, we go all the way back to high school and all the camps and the McDonald's game. As I just mentioned, Lowell Hamilton, you know, played with him as a freshman in high school. So I have respect for all those guys, man. But, you know, once you get between those lines, you know, that friendship goes out the window.
So you get past, what was it like to cut the nets down? You know, what did
man,
that feel
best
like?
Best experience of my life.
Wow.
Best experience of my life, man.
Y'all almost got me kicked out of school because we were me and my roommate who we played high school ball together, football at Pioneer, were out in the walking down the middle of campus, singing "Hail to the Victors." We had people yelling out the windows telling us to shut up.
You went to Pioneer?
Yeah, I went to Pioneer. Yep.
My dad played in Pioneer when it was called Ann Arbor High School. My dad was the first all state basketball player to come out of Ann Arbor High School.
Yeah, yeah. We won the state championship football in was it 84, and then lost in a semifinal game, trying to win back to back. But yeah, it was so that was where the roots were. Roots were there, but yeah, we it was like all of us, and y'all being at Michigan, there's also some extended family guys out in the community who y'all connected with. I know my brother often talks about you and him talking about old Sanford and Son episodes. So everybody was.
hey, he knows me. Then he talking about old Sanford and Son episodes.
it was like everybody felt it. And what's crazy about that is that y'all had five guys drafted in the NBA. You had Glenn went to Miami, Ramil went to Atlanta, Lloyd went to the Clippers. We played for a long time there. Terry went to Milwaukee, and then you went to San Antonio, Spurs. So, I mean, that team produced a lot of talent to show for, you know, the championship that was won in a thrilling fashion in overtime, but to be able to do that. And so now you're, you know, thinking about just kind of quickly to kind of talk about your arc, your life, because one of the things you do right now is you work with young athletes trying to prepare them for this journey. When you coming out of that, what was your arc like after winning that championship, the league, and kind of moving to where you are right now?
Well, what happened with me, how I got into doing player development and teaching the game, man, you know, after I'm a basketball junkie. I'm a gym rat, man. So, you know, after I got done playing, you know, I used to, you know, go to the parks and, you know, play with the guys, the kids at the park and whatnot, just to, you know, keep that, you keep that energy, man. It's hard to just go cold turkey when you stop playing. It's hard to just go cold turkey like that. But I found out that I had a knack for teaching the game around 2002. And then I was at an opportunity to coach in the new ABA, which is a startup at the time, minor league system. I was a general manager and head coach of a franchise up in Fresno, California. And then just went from there. It took off from there. And then, you know, my own personal experiences, you know, throughout my recruitment, you know, I went through some stuff with, you know, with adults taking advantage of a kid. You know, if you recall, I signed a letter of intent with UCLA under coercion before I was able to sign with Michigan. And so that personal experience in itself, you know, and I see some of the tragedies that happened, like the kid Brian Bowen, signed with Louisville and what his dad did. You know, I try to, you know, educate the families and the student athletes on the pitfalls and the do's and don'ts. And more so than just that, well, I wouldn't say more so, just as important as that, you know, the skill, you know, the skill work, you know, being prepared. You know, as Coach John Wooden always said, you know, all we have control over is the preparation. God controls wins and losses. And so,
that's right.
You know, that inspired me to start 9-star basketball camps. We specialize in player development and exposure and combine camps for student athletes, male and female. And, you know, we're compliant and certified with the NCAA. So we're doing that. And so that just gave me, you know, insight, man, and what's needed out here. You know, I was always raised that, you know, when you have knowledge and resources, you have to give back. And so, you know, that's what we try to do. You know, I'm also president of a nonprofit organization that's targeting health and wellness within our communities. So, you know, I was just raised that way, man. My mother was a giver and a person that was always a fixture in the community. And so that kind of like, you know, rubbed off on me.
When you look at just you know, the discussion around, you know, pay for play and just the whole, you know, revolution of rethinking what's happening in college athletics, you know, do you have, in your own experience, are there one or two things that you think that you would recommend if you were asked by, you know, a Blue Ribbon committee to make some recommendations? What recommendations would you make to improve the experience for college athletes?
I would say that the first thing they should do is provide a stipend that's better than what they're getting now. Because, you know, student athletes, when you're on scholarship, you're not allowed to work during the season. And every kid does not have the same opportunities. You know, a lot of these kids that they recruited are highly touted athletes are coming from economically challenged homes, financially challenged homes. And so I think the NCAA should start revisiting if they haven't already. You know, I noticed the issue has been brought up, but I think the student athletes should be able to, you know, have a stipend where they can take care of their bare necessities. I know they have the training tables. We had that stuff. But, I mean, when you're talking about an athlete that's practicing 2.5-3 hours every day, then they have to manage and juggle schoolwork. You know, we want to eat, man. I remember going to the training table and sneaking food out of the training table because when I got home, I was still hungry. And, you know, if you didn't have any money in your pocket, you know, you were going to starve from 10 o'clock at night until you woke up the next morning. And so, you know, I think that's a major area that needs to be addressed. And then, and I don't know the solution to this one, but there has to be some kind of regulations or governing bodies on all these streetwalkers and parasites running around here running AAU programs, and they're transactional and not transformational. All they think about is themselves. They could care less about the student athlete and their families. And so I think the NCAA really needs to get a handle on the AAU system, because I'm not saying all the programs, because there are some good programs and organizations out here that's doing things the right way. And I can name a few. I'm not going to go there now. But there are some, more than not, that's doing it the wrong way. You know, these guys are getting kickbacks from the shoe companies. You know, they're lying to parents. They're not getting on the phones, helping these kids get exposure. And so, you know, that's an area that kind of leads up to the student athlete making the bad decisions of looking for a handout when it's time to go on, to be on a college campus, because that's what they've been used to from the seventh, eighth, ninth grade, getting handouts. These AAU guys show up to their doorstep with gym shoes, gear, extra perks, and so it kind of creates a culture. And so that culture has to be changed, and the only way it can be changed is if the athlete is not out here starving. So if the athlete's not starving, that eliminates these streetwalkers from offering the perks. So the schools and the NCAA should take over the perks. And it's not about challenging amateurism. You know, you're still amateurs. Just because you're getting a stipend as a college athlete does not make you a professional. And so there's a fine line there that kind of, you know, keeps it up on the shelf, if you will, in terms of making this, us putting this at the forefront and making a change. And it has to, because what's going to happen is that you're going to start finding a lot of, especially in basketball in particular, a lot of these kids, the top kids, are going to end up going overseas or to the G League, because they're going to start letting high school players play in the G League straight out of high school. And so that's going to affect the talent pool at the college level. And so as we know, you know, the NCAA is a profitable business.
Yeah.
You know, they're always looking at the bottom line. And so these three items, these couple items that I'm talking about, it's going to affect the bottom line if they don't get a handle on
it. And that's something I was actually going to, you know, I've been going back and forth with Steve Bardo because, you know, he's doing it, and I want to talk about that. I'd love to have you come back. We can take a deeper dive in that topic because of your real understanding about the pipeline and those pitfalls in the pipeline. So I'd love to have you come back to talk about that. I would be remiss if I also didn't give you the chance to talk about your take a few minutes to talk about your organization a little bit more and where people can find you.
Okay, well, first, you can find us online at 9starbasketballcampsplural.com. That's all spelled out, 9starbasketballcamps.com. And what we do, like I mentioned, man, you know, first thing we do is deal with player development, you know, the preparation. Because I tell parents all the time, you know, they want to get their college exposure because they want their kid to be recruited. I said, if they're not prepared, they're going to get exposed. Instead of getting exposed, they're going to get exposed. And so what we do, we target that first. And then when a kid's ready and we think they have a potential for the next level, we start giving them exposure. You know, we recommend, you know, the right schools that that fit their bill. We have a partnership with High Profile Sports out of Northern California, and they specialize specifically in lining student athletes up with the right schools, because a lot of times, you know, most of the time, parents and students are the student athletes are delusional. Everyone wants to be a Division I player. Everyone's not a Division I player. So, you know, with this partnership with High Profile Sports, gives us an opportunity to really take advantage of their algorithm and their database and identify and pair these players, student athletes up with the right schools that have scholarships in their position. Because a lot of times you see kids fall through the cracks because they're chasing their tail. So we kind of, you know, spearhead that. And then we also, our camps, you know, we do player development camps, combines, which is skill development and showcase exposure camps. We're concentrated here on the West Coast. We're headquartered in Las Vegas. We're planning to expand nationwide. We're going to start back in Michigan and help those kids, because that's where I learned the game, the fundamentals, starting out as a young kid. We just continuously building our brand. We're in talks in terms of building our own facility as well, because one of the biggest issues we find is gym time and the rentals, you know, usually are not cost effective. So what we're doing, you know, in that regard is taking advantage of my business partnerships with our land development company. And so that's something that's really, you know, close and dear to me. I kind of keep that under wraps because we're kind of in the beginning phases, but just to touch on what we're doing with Nine Star. And then also I run my mom's nonprofit organization. I lost my mom in 2016, the Victory Garden Foundation. We deal with health. Our premise is health, wellness, and fitness in our communities. And so we're going to be doing some new things coming up here in the near future, a couple charity events. That's primarily what takes up most of my time, Devon, is, you know, nine-star basketball camps and nonprofit, you know, and then, you know, I have a four-year-old son, so that's dear to my heart. You know, I have an oldest boy, too. He's 26. So I, you know, that it keeps me around the game, and so, yeah, man, I'm good.
Well, hey, man, first of all, thank you very much for joining us. And, you are just doing the kind of work that I know we on Real Sports Guys really talk about, what the power is of student athletes, you know, who are going to be the next Paul Robesons and Jim Browns. And you're leading in that legacy where it's about building the capacity of the next generation of leaders. So I really appreciate that. And one of the things that we do here on RSG is we ask our guests to drop the mic. And so, you came up from the hip hop age, and, you know, we all came up a little bit, you know what we're talking about. And
right,
so,
right.
I want to give you a second right here to drop the mic for everybody here on RSG.
Oh, that's all good, man. Hey, you guys are listening to Sean Higgins, number 24, University of Michigan, the first and only team up to date that's won a national championship in school history. You're listening to Real Sports Guys. Go Blue, baby.